This is WBUR, and we're interrupting Here and Now to bring you the daily coronavirus briefing live
today
from the State House.
Today we're going to share an update on our community health centers, who are supporting many of our efforts in response to COVID-19. But first, I want to take a quick update on testing and hospitalization, which I think, as most people know, are some of the key metrics we're paying a lot of attention to. Yesterday, almost 12,000 tests were reported, a big number that was double the previous day's total, which brings our total number of tests conducted in the Commonwealth to over 350,000. Of the tests reported yesterday, 14% were positive for COVID-19. That percentage is much more in line with the trend that we've been seeing over the past week, where the percent of cases that are positive has been lower than pretty much anything we saw in April. As I've said before, test results are one of the key indicators that we monitor closely. And we need to remember that those results depend a lot on who does get tested. No single day is indicative of a trend. Data trends have to be looked at over time and are crucial to our conversations about how soon we can start the process of reopening. That's why it's important to not draw too many conclusions from one day's data. Other data points we pay close attention to are the number of COVID-19 hospitalizations, the rate of hospitalizations among all COVID-19 cases, and the amount of COVID cases in intensive care units. There are currently 3,436 patients hospitalized in Massachusetts from COVID-19. That represents a reduction of about 126 patients compared to the previous day. There are approximately 850 COVID-19 patients currently in intensive care units. And I would just add that the intensive care unit capacity in Massachusetts is significantly above today what it would normally be. But that's because we worked with the hospital community to build additional so-called surge capacity in their ICUs to be able to manage the increase in COVID cases, which has turned out to be a pretty effective strategy in ensuring that our hospitals could do that as well as continue to serve people who are dealing with other healthcare conditions and circumstances as well. Over the past week, we have seen a steady reduction in hospitalizations. There are 280 fewer hospitalizations for COVID-19 patients than there were last Friday. Overall, about 5% of cases, which is a pretty consistent number, have been hospitalized. We're making progress here, but I want to remind everybody that the virus spreads quickly and continues to impact, based on our testing data, thousands of people across the Commonwealth. And while we'd like to see the drop come just as quickly as possible, it's not going to happen all at once as the data shows. We've seen progress and we'll continue to see progress as long as everybody continues to do their part. Another way we're continuing to push back against the virus is to pursue more personal protective equipment or PPE. This includes masks, gowns, gloves, ventilators, and other gear for first responders, emergency management personnel, healthcare workers, and nursing home workers. As of yesterday, we've distributed over 9.2 million pieces of PPE, basically in the past 40 days, to hospitals, nursing homes, community health centers, cities and towns, and first responders across the Commonwealth. Overall, this week showed us some encouraging trends when it comes to our fight against the virus. And we know that everyone is anxious, and so are we, to move forward on bringing back the economy, and we all hope that we'll be able to start to take some of those steps soon. But at the same time, we did see individual days this week where the fluctuations in the data were less encouraging. That underscores the fact that the reopening process won't be instantaneous and will probably be done in an appropriately planned and phased-in way. There's no way you can just flip a switch, and doing so all at once could almost guarantee that we would have a huge spike in infections and more fatalities, the exact result we are seeking to avoid. Instead, we need to see the numbers continue to improve and to see that curve gradually slope downward. That will enable us to begin the phased approach to reopening that we've been talking about in the past few weeks. And even still, there will be bumps along the way after that. We're likely going to be dealing with outbreaks until things like vaccines and treatments catch up with this virus. We certainly expect that will happen. We have some of the smartest people in the world right here in Massachusetts that are making real progress on both treatments and vaccines, but that will take time. We need to stay committed to the fight, because if we let up now, we risk losing all the progress that we've made. Which brings me to the community health centers. Some of our most crucial partners in the fight against COVID-19 have been the folks who work and manage our community health centers here in Massachusetts. Today we're joined by Eliza Lake, who's the CEO of Hilltown Community Health Center in Western Massachusetts. Eliza is here to discuss what community health centers have experienced during the COVID-19 crisis, and she'll share an important message to patients who need medical care. And as we said before, we deeply value the role of community health centers. They're firmly rooted in the neighborhoods they serve, and they play an important role in facilitating access to care and reducing and eliminating healthcare disparities. That's why we've been proactive about partnering with community health centers in this fight against COVID-19. Last week, we announced that we had expanded our testing partnership with Quest Diagnostics and 18 community health centers throughout the Commonwealth. That partnership is specifically focused on increasing testing in many of our hardest hit areas, including high density communities and communities of color. We recognize that many of these places continue to be hotspots for the virus, including neighborhoods in Boston, Worcester, Springfield, and municipalities like Chelsea, Brockton, Lawrence, Lowell, Revere, and Holyoke. Our COVID-19 Response Command Center continues to partner with the leadership in these communities to support a robust response to the virus. And the increased testing throughout the community health center system is a key part of that overall effort. Community health centers have always played a critical role in all Massachusetts communities in delivering health care. For example, Hilltown Community Health Centers has 5 sites offering a wide range of health services for communities across Western Mass. In a few minutes, Eliza will talk a little more about the terrific work that's being done by the team at Hilltown to support the residents of these communities during the crisis. And today we're here to help our community health centers make sure people know that they're open for business during this pandemic. The Mass League of Community Health Centers is launching a public awareness campaign called New Tools, New Rules, Same Great Care. This public awareness campaign will consist of TV and digital ads and has a very simple message. Community health centers are open during this crisis, and people should come in for the care that they need. The campaign makes clear that patients should continue to seek care for their medical conditions, like asthma and diabetes, at their local community health centers or their physician's offices. We know that these medical needs don't stop when the COVID-19 crisis begins. A few weeks ago, we had representatives from the hospitals throughout the Commonwealth join us here to encourage people to continue to call their doctor and to talk about their health care needs and to go to the hospital if they had an emergency. And believe it or not, after some of those engagements, those conversations, and those PSAs, people did start, in fact, to return. And at this point in time, in many of the conversations we have with our colleagues in the hospital community, they've indicated that slowly but surely, they have seen people start to come back. Just like the hospitals, the community health centers have implemented measures to ensure that they remain safe and ready to care for all medical conditions. Community health centers have also worked hard to set up telehealth services so people can more easily connect with their health care provider. Simply put, and we've said this many times before, we plan for this, we are able to deal with it, we have the capacity. We do not want people getting sicker or exacerbating an illness or an injury because they're concerned about the healthcare system's ability to support them. It's important that people are cared for when they're sick, whether that's for COVID-19 or for so many other medical problems. The medical and health professionals who staff our community health centers are ready to serve and help patients who need care. I'd now like to turn it over to Eliza Lake, who can talk a little bit more about the work that she and her team at Hilltown are doing to respond to COVID-19 and how their facilities are open and ready to serve all the patients who need their support. Eliza?
You're listening to live coverage of the daily coronavirus briefing at the State House, where Charlie Baker,
good afternoon,
the governor,
and thank
has
you,
just
governor
handed
Baker,
it over to
for
the
head
opportunity of
the Hilltown to speak
community
about community health,
health
centers'
Western
work to maintain access to important health care services. I'm especially honored to speak about our commitment to mental health, as we are currently observing Mental Health Month, and the role of telehealth in meeting people's mental health needs. In the early weeks of this public health crisis, community health centers across Massachusetts acted rapidly, curtailing many services in order to keep our communities safe and in response to public health directives. We transformed very quickly from primary care settings to urgent care centers, redesigning our sites and our work to meet the need of the moment. Over a matter of days in March, Hilltown Community Health Center's staff created new processes, new teams, and new ways of caring for our patients. For every decision, we balanced patient and public safety with access to care for our vulnerable communities. HCHC staff maintained a focus on both COVID and non-COVID needs, on physical and mental health, and on the social determinants of health that affect both. I know that my colleagues across the state showed similar dedication and commitment to their missions, despite the incredible uncertainty of that time. These changes to practice and the significant decreases in visits across all services came with an impact on health centers' financial stability. The health centers were already struggling with workforce challenges before the crisis, but this challenge has been compounded by reductions in available staffing due to caregiving responsibilities or by a need to protect vulnerable family members from infection. Telehealth, therefore, has been a critical piece of our overall response. It has been a vital strategy, both in caring for our patients and in helping to address some of the health center's financial distress due to their response to the crisis. Telehealth has been particularly helpful in making sure that our patients who were receiving behavioral health care before the COVID outbreak can continue to receive it. It is providing us with the ability to meet an increase in demand for these services, an unsurprising outcome of the pandemic. I want to express my and my colleagues' thanks to Governor Baker, Lieutenant Governor Polito, Secretary Sutters, and the team at MassHealth for making a decision very early on to reimburse behavioral health and other important primary care services that we provide through telehealth. We really appreciate your foresight and quick action. We appreciate it at Hilltown Community Health Center because we have seen the growing needs that telehealth can address and how it expanded patients' access to mental health. We serve a rural region that has no public transportation system, so patients who struggled to make their in-person therapy appointments before are now better able to access the support they need. We do not yet have high-speed internet in all of our small towns, so being able to meet with patients over the phone has enabled almost everyone to talk to their therapist when they need to. We have been able to extend our services from the usual office with comfortable chairs to something that works for the patient. It certainly isn't always ideal. Our therapists have described having telehealth sessions with a man sitting in his car parked to the public hotspot so he could have a video visit, a teenager who drove to the top of the hill to get better cell phone coverage, or a patient who went to a small shed with her cell phone as it was the best place to find some privacy from a large family. Telehealth is allowing us to meet their needs flexibly on their schedule and in their place. Statewide, all health centers have worked very hard to successfully ramp up their telehealth capacity and are excited to do more. The Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers and our statewide accountable care organization, Community Care Cooperative, or C3, continue to collaborate on expanding the capacity of health center providers and patients to participate in telehealth services. C3 was recently awarded several grants, including from local family foundations and a federal grant devoted to telehealth capacity. These funds are not only helping us today, but are also being used to assist health centers in implementing telehealth in a manner that is sustainable for the long term. Telehealth will help us increase access while addressing other long-standing problems, such as provider recruitment and retention. It will allow us to collaborate with health centers across the state so that we can pool our clinical resources, enhancing patient access and reducing barriers to care. For instance, a few community health centers are already sharing behavioral health clinical resources like psychiatry via telehealth. We are excited about the potential telehealth holds for the future. I want to echo the governor's remarks about reminding people that the community health centers are here and ready to take care of you. Although some of the rules and tools around how you access that care have changed, it's still the same high-quality care that you have come to expect. Make sure to call us first so that we can figure out the best kind of appointment for your particular health need, whether that be in person or through telehealth. I also want to thank Governor Baker and Secretary Sutters and Lieutenant Governor Polito for the financial and regulatory assistance you have provided to the health center network over the last couple of months. This essential temporary relief has allowed us to maintain access to care for health center patients during this crisis and also gives us hope that we will be here long after it is over as partners in the Commonwealth's collective recovery. Our behavioral health staff certainly have moments of being worried and fearful for their clients who faced extraordinary stressors in their lives even before this crisis. But they are also so grateful to be able to provide support during this terrible time, and our patients are deeply grateful that it is possible. Thank you. And now Secretary Setters.
This is live coverage of the daily coronavirus briefing at the State House. HHS Secretary Mary Lou Sutters is now coming to the podium.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Governor, Lieutenant Governor, and Eliza. Thank you for coming in from Worthington to be with us today. I'm so grateful to you and your colleagues in the healthcare system for providing health care, including behavioral health care, during these times. As we have often said here, taking care of oneself both behaviorally and physically is very important. As the governor noted, the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers has launched the campaign, New Tools, New Rules, Same Great Care, to encourage all residents to continue to take care of their health, both physical and mental health. As you heard, the community health centers stepped up during this pandemic to really provide telehealth and video appointments and have strong health safety protocols for in-person visits. The New Tools, New Rules, Same Great Care campaign features patients that represent the diversity of our state with common conditions such as asthma, diabetes, and pregnancy. The message is upbeat and clear. Don't be afraid. Get the care you need. The campaign consists of television and social media ads. The ads are generously being run for free by WCVB Channel 5 in the Greater Boston area and WWLP 22 News and the CW Springfield in Western Mass. The ads in English, Spanish, and other languages are targeted specifically to the communities and zip codes with concentrations of low-income residents. It is important to not delay seeking urgent treatment, either in person or through telehealth. There is no question that telehealth has expanded exponentially as a result of this pandemic. Many of us have become comfortable using popular apps such as FaceTime, Zoom, or Skype to video chat with our loved ones. So it shouldn't be that difficult to make the leap of having a video treatment appointment with your primary care provider. And under one of Governor Baker's executive orders, health plans are required to reimburse health care for telehealth at the same rate as for in-person office visits. The Mass League of Community Health Centers surveyed their members and found that many of the health centers have stepped up to provide care through telehealth, as you've heard, including ensuring that providing long-term behavioral health care that started pre-pandemic continues through telehealth. And in fact, the health centers report that just from January to April, the total telehealth visits for medical services grew from 506 to more than 83,000. And for behavioral health grew from 517 visits to 22,000. MassHealth began covering telehealth services in mid-March, including services provided both over the phone or live video for all medically necessary and clinically appropriate care. There have been more than 600,000 telehealth visits in MassHealth since March. We also contracted with three telehealth providers to further support members with questions about symptoms that may be related to COVID-19. You connect those through the Buoy app. And we've made it available for people who do not have insurance. It's very important. We encourage patients to get the care they need and to strongly consider using telehealth services as a real safe option. Taking care of the ongoing health needs of our most vulnerable residents, keep them healthier, and may reduce the number who need emergency room services or hospitalization. Thank you. Governor.
Questions?
This is WBUR's live coverage of the daily coronavirus briefing at the State House, where Governor Baker is now taking questions.
Any sort all summer through Labor Day. Is that something you could see happening on a statewide level?
Well, obviously, we'll be talking to our colleagues in local government about decisions like that. But, you know, the Lieutenant Governor and I have both marched in a lot of parades in the city of Boston over the course, for me anyway, of the past 10 years. And it would be hard for me to imagine, given how popular those parades are, how you would ever deliver on a social distancing standard for one of those. I mean, those are usually, you know, shoulder to shoulder, four or five deep, sometimes more, and they stretch 2 or 3 miles. So I certainly understand why he thinks it would be important for us to get a little more ground between us and the coronavirus before something like that were to take place. I've said this before, I think one of the biggest challenges, not just we, but everybody everywhere, is going to have when it comes to dealing with coronavirus once you get past the surge and start to develop some sort of new normal, is how do you deal with those big shoulder-to-shoulder, you know, massive humanity events. They are exactly the opposite of what we've all been delivering on for the past few months in terms of guidance and advisories and policies.
Does this have the makings of the summer that wasn't?
You know, I think the most interesting sort of positive thing I can say about all this, and there aren't many, is that people have come up with creative and unusual ways to share ideas, to share stories, and to share themselves with one another through means other than those that they've traditionally pursued. And, you know, the commentary that Eliza and Secretary Sutter's both talked about with respect to the rise of telehealth in Massachusetts. Telehealth was invented in Massachusetts almost 20 years ago, and it's never been legal here. Not legal in the sense that it's a covered benefit the way it is in so many other places. And you talk to almost anybody in the provider community and people on the payer side, and they'll tell you that the combination of the arrival of the coronavirus and the executive emergency order that we issued on telehealth has brought this into the mainstream in Massachusetts as a legitimate way for clinicians to support and provide services to their patients that simply didn't exist before. And my guess, my expectation is, however we're playing within the framework of what's possible under COVID-19, people will come up with interesting ways to spend their time and to stay in touch. It won't be, in many cases, it won't be the old familiar way they did it, but, you know, people adapt, and I think sometimes we underestimate them with respect to that.
Governor,
but it will definitely be a different kind of summer. Yeah.
Governor, Church News had asked you to start allowing them to face in services in some capacity. How soon might they be allowed to, even outdoor services or something?
I think churches are coming to see you soon, aren't they? Tomorrow. Okay. I think I am very interested in hearing what comes from the conversations that the religious community has with the reopening advisory board. I said from the beginning that one of the most difficult elements of that gathering order, which limited gatherings to 10 or less, was the impact it had on people's ability to practice their faith. But that said, there's plenty of evidence from around the world that in places where people didn't do that, religious gatherings became a really big hotbed and a hotspot of outbreak. So whatever we do here, and that's part of the reason why I'm anxious to hear what they have to say, is we have to do that as safely as we can, working collaboratively with our colleagues in the religious community to ensure that it's not a short-term thing. Well, whatever happens here, whenever that happens, we'd want it to be something that is sustainable over time. And remember, a lot of the folks who practice their faith are older. I mean, there's a lot of young people too, but I can't remember the last time I went to a service in a temple or a mosque or a church or a cathedral where a significant portion of the population wasn't under the age of, or over the age of 50. And that's exactly the community in many respects that we need to pay attention to.
Yep.
So the summer camp stuff and the child care stuff is the source of daily discussion between people in our administration and folks who operate those programs. And by the way, those are also practically daily conversations between me and governors in other states who are wrestling with the same questions, and the chiefs of staffs who are talking to each other as part of that Northeast coalition. These issues are hard, and the way I would describe them would be to say that I think everybody who's talking about this would like to figure out a way to do it and to do it as safely as it can be done. The tough part is figuring out, especially when it comes to some of this stuff that involves the joys of being a kid, figuring out some way to do this where you have at least enough rules to make sure it can be done safely, but you don't destroy the whole spontaneous nature of what those are supposed to be about. But these are, I mean, I've probably talked to 20 governors in the past 2 days, 3 days on various calls. These two issues have come up on every single call, and I always end it by saying, so which one of you actually has the plan that I can read, right? And the answer is, we're not quite there yet, and that's exactly where we are as well. But we get how important this is. It's not just important for people's ability to work. It's important for, you know, getting back to Steve's point, this is one of those things that makes kids kids, and we get that.
This is WBUR, and you're listening to Governor Charlie Baker live take questions and answers
sure.
at his daily
yeah,
coronavirus
there, I mean,
briefing at the State House.
I think there's 12,000 kids worth of capacity there. It's never got anywhere near that level, and they've worked quite well.
Governor, what do you make of the rules for gun sellers to reopen that Judge Woodlock put in his order? And have they gotten a seat to pitch the advisory board?
Okay, so I'm under the impression he has spoken about what was going to be in his order, but he hasn't actually issued his order.
I think there was an order issued yesterday, right?
I don't think so.
They would be reopening at noon tomorrow, 4 appointments per hour, up to 12 people in a store at a time. Is that not in?
Okay, my lawyers told me he had spoken to what was going to be in his order, but he hasn't actually issued it yet. So my it could be that my folks are wrong and you're right. The bottom line is we're just going to comply with whatever he says.
Governor, there were some eye-popping unemployment numbers released for the nation.
Yep.
Ever since the Depression. Do you think Massachusetts is in a better spot than the rest of the country, and are you optimistic about the economy over the next 2 years returning?
I guess I would say two things about that. The first is, people have worked enormously hard here to get folks the benefits they're entitled to. We were one of the first 10 states to stand up an unemployment assistance program for people who weren't part of the traditional unemployment system. And at this point in time, I think there are still less than half the states in the country that have actually figured out how to get people money into those programs. We've also, every single day except Easter, there's been a town hall in more than one language that hundreds of thousands of people in Massachusetts have participated in to work their way through the traditional system. And at this point in time, literally 500,000 plus people in Massachusetts are collecting unemployment under the traditional program, in addition to the couple of hundred thousand that are getting it through the pandemic program. So I guess what I would say is I think we've done a decent job of moving as quickly as we could to help folks who lost their jobs through no fault of their own get the benefits that they're entitled to. But I would say that the state of the economy generally as a result of the COVID-19 and coronavirus outbreak is really, really on the edge. And that's part of the reason why, if we continue to see positive movement and downward trends on the issues we've talked about here before, we're going to try and develop a set of safe ways to begin to phase in a reopening. But you can't look at the numbers that are out there and conclude anything other than, not just here, but in many places in Europe and around the world, this pandemic has not only been a public health outbreak and crisis, but it's been an incredible gut punch to the economy and to the people who work in virtually every country it's affected, including ours.
Governor.
There's a long conversation going on right now between the public health folks and the folks at DESE and some of the folks, some of the school superintendents around what might be doable with regard to graduation. But I would certainly hope Plymouth would wait until a bunch of folks who know what they're talking about can help them think about how to do this in a way that's safe. I guess that would be my message. It's a matter of days, okay, between where they are and where we are. And in some issues, we're being told that we're actually ahead of those states on certain things and that they're ahead of us on others. I said yesterday that my view on this is that we should talk to as many of our colleagues in the Northeast and in other like states as we possibly can, to get the best ideas and the best advice and the best guidance we can from our own folks and from them and from their folks, and then try to make decisions that don't create so much confusion between and among people who are located in similar areas that nobody can figure out what the rules are. But I don't expect everybody to move in lockstep because everybody's not in the same place. I mean, if you look at the data on a state-by-state basis, roughly 11 states make up about 80% of all the COVID-19 deaths and cases in the country. 40 states, I'm counting the Washington, D.C., that's why I get to 51. 40 states represent about 20%, and we're not all in the same place. And you wouldn't expect, if we weren't all in the same place, that we would all move in exactly the same way or deal with these issues the same way. But we do talk a lot, and those of us who are in the Northeast talk all the time, because we don't want to do things that create difficulty for our neighbors, and our neighbors don't want to do things that create difficulty for us. And this summer camp question is a good example of that. I mean, we're all struggling with it. We would all like to figure out how to do it. It's one of those issues that we all share a common interest in trying to find a way to move forward. And if another state comes up with a really interesting way of doing this that the rest of us think can work, we'll pursue it that way. But the fact that we're not all on exactly the same time frame, a lot of that just has to do with, you know, the so-called facts on the ground. The numbers in Massachusetts look a lot different than they do in some of our surrounding states. Some cases better, and in some cases worse. Can you let Bruce?
Sure.
Let's see, Bruce. Thanks. I've been reading a lot about other states. We may not control the roads going through a lot of
people,
but a lot of them are starting to use, like, the restaurants using the streets, shutting down streets so no traffic can go, so people can walk and ride bikes. I haven't seen much of that happening here yet. Is this something on your radar screen?
We've done some. I mean, that's obviously something that usually requires collaboration and cooperation between us and the locals. We've done it in a bunch of different places over the course of the past 5 or 6 weeks, and it continues to be something that we talk to our colleagues in local government about. Sometimes it's our road, sometimes it's their road, but those are things we have done and we'll continue to talk to people about. I guess if folks have people done this like on a permanent change, like they've changed it completely from ever being a road to becoming something other than that, or is this more sort of, you know, try it out, see how it works?
Well, I think it's always the latter, starting with the Seattle, starting to do it on a quasi-permanent basis so that you just sort of divert traffic elsewhere and you're trying to destroy traffic in general and encourage people to walk and ride bikes and find other ways to get around. The idea of rolling restaurants out in the streets so you can create more rooms rather than packing everyone inside.
So... there are a lot of conversations that are going on like that, and we'll come back and share some of our thoughts on that.
Governor, could you... Oh, sorry.
Steve? Go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to see if Eliza Lake could speak to the what the financial hit looks like, what the caseload looks like, maybe compared to pre-COVID, just to get a sense of what types of patients are not being seen right now, or what types of illnesses are not being treated as much as before.
Well, I think the primary message is to reiterate what this campaign is talking about, which is we need people with chronic disease who need constant management to keep coming in. We've been doing our work to reach out to them to make sure that they're coming in. We have seen, certainly in, you know, we provide a range of services. So in dental and optometry, we've, you know, had to reduce ourselves down to urgent visits only, has gone down to about 10, 15, 20% of normal visits. In medical and behavioral health, because we've been able to transition to a telehealth quickly, behavioral health, I believe, in most community health centers has gotten back almost to the same volume as it had been. And medical, obviously, is still severely impacted, but we are working very hard to get the message out that people should be getting in touch with us. And whether those visits are telehealth or in person, we don't want anyone to be neglecting their care as a result of this situation.
Governor, could I ask you about the cancellation of the Boston Pops this year? A lot of people look forward to the fireworks. And
yeah.
I guess the concert will go on tape, but it won't be quite the same.
No, it won't be. I've gone to it in my current job. I also went to it when my kids were younger, and we just sort of hung out on the grass and enjoyed it. And we've actually watched it from both sides of the river. It's actually kind of interesting to watch it on the Cambridge side. I think that's a really good example of something that won't happen this year, but I fully expect that people will come up with other ways of celebrating our nation's birthday, and I do think we need to remember that there are a lot of really creative people, not just here in Massachusetts, but all over the place, and they are constantly coming up with interesting ways to celebrate or communicate around a particular event that's been lost or a particular moment that they want to recognize, but they can't recognize in the way they have before. And that is, in fact, just kind of the way it's going to be for the time being. And I do believe that that kind of a gathering, especially since a lot of the folks who show up at that event aren't from Boston. They come from all over the place. It's a much harder event, like many of the others, the parades, for example, to actually create any kind of structure around how you could live up to some of the requirements with respect to distance and sort of safe public gathering. So I fully expect people will come up with some interesting ways to celebrate the 4th. Most of them will end up on social media, and a lot of us will have a chance to enjoy them one at a time as opposed to in one big event.
Governor, have you spoken to Mayor Walsh about possibly easing allowable construction limits?
There's been a lot of back and forth between us and the city and us and other communities around construction generally. And I think they also came in and met with the advisory board, didn't they? Yeah, this is one of those issues that's pretty top of mind and will certainly be dealt with when they issue their report.
Thank you.
Thank
Finally,
you.
It's going to be rain tomorrow. Any movie tips? You had one last week. It was a good review.
But you think I got a good review on that one, Steve? Yeah.
Well, that one. So it's going to be rainy tomorrow, so maybe if you have two.
Or, all right, or so, a good book recommendation.
So here's sort of a... There's a show that used to run on the BBC that's called Bailey and Scott. And it's sort of the British TV version of Cagney and Lacey. And it's great.
Thank you.
I got three thumbs up on The Biggest Little Farm, by the way.
Thank you.
Call
up.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and what you've been hearing is our live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus briefing from the State House, including a Q&A, which was what you were hearing at the end there. Listening alongside us was WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Hey there, Anthony.
Hi, Tiziana. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, too. You know, everybody who listens to Radio Boston knows it is my favorite radio day of the week. I love Friday. So two different press conferences there, Anthony. The one, you know, with the prepared remarks and then a very different set of areas of focus during the Q&A. In the prepared remarks, it seemed like telehealth was the issue of the day.
Yeah, telehealth and the role of community health centers. And the message that was very similar to the message that was sent out last week by Governor Baker regarding hospital care, that community health centers are up and running. They're launching a campaign called New Tools, New Rules, Same Great Care. And the idea is it's important for people who rely on community health centers to understand that they're up and running and that they shouldn't avoid routine care, important care beyond COVID-19. That the community health centers are up and running and able to do it. And telehealth, of course, plays a huge role because you can avoid going into a hospital. It will be compensated thanks to new rules from the state. So, important to continue to access the health care that people need beyond the pandemic.
Anthony, I felt like there was a subtext that we were hearing there as well, which is with the decrease in regular healthcare services since the pandemic began, that this reimbursement for telehealth services is probably pretty important to the financial survival of a lot of these smaller community health centers.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And we heard Charlie Baker talk about that. He said, you know, telehealth was invented in Massachusetts, but it's never been legal in Massachusetts. And now this crisis has brought it into the mainstream, and he sort of talked about that as an example of how people and institutions adapt in times of crisis. Yeah, but clearly the fact that telehealth is now part of the sort of insurance reimbursement system is hugely important to their financial viability.
So let's shift gears to the Q&A. One of the many things that came up was current unemployment numbers and sort of the pain the economy is experiencing during this shutdown in Massachusetts. What did you hear?
Well, I mean, Charlie Baker talked about Massachusetts as being one of the first states to stand up an unemployment system for non-traditional workers, gig workers, and so forth. You know, but in general, you know, he cut to the chase and said the state of the economy everywhere, including Massachusetts, is really, really, really on the edge, were his words. And you know, Tiziana, the April job figures, 20.5 million Americans lost their jobs. That's an astonishing number. Unemployment rates are now at 15%. The Federal Reserve in St. Louis, I was reading, predicts that rate could more than double to 32%. 1 in 5 Americans have filed for unemployment. Those still working, many are working reduced hours. So this is a huge hit. I mean, if there's any silver lining, and boy, it's a shred of a silver lining, it's that a lot of folks who are out of work are furloughed. And so there's hope that that means they'll be going back to work and going back to work in the not too distant future, and that the economy then can begin to reignite. But I mean, that's, you know, that's for now, there is deep, deep, deep pain and deep distress in the job market.
We've got around a minute and a half left. Anthony, the other place where I felt like I heard deep pain was in the questions and the answers about all that will be lost this summer, whether it's the announcement today by the mayor that there will be no festivals, no pops, nothing, no summer camps for kids potentially, you know, just all of these rites of summer that are important to our emotional well-being. We heard a lot of loss about that today.
Yeah, I was beginning to make a list. I mean, you made the list there. I mean, parades, baseball games, graduation, the Boston Pops, July 4th celebrations, summer camps, on and on. I think it was our own Steve Brown who sort of posed the question to the governor about, is this going to be the summer that wasn't? And yeah, tough times. I don't know what to say about that other than people adapt. This too shall pass, and a lot of these rites and rituals will come back. But this is going to be a very, very different summer than any of us have ever experienced. That's for sure.
Anthony, are you going to stick around and join our panel for Week in Review after the break?
Oh, all right. Twist my arm.
All right. Excellent. So listen, listeners, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our panelists will join us. We'll do Week in Review, and we will take your calls. I'm Tiziana Deering, and this is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and just before the break, we wrapped up some analysis after bringing you live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus briefing from the State House. Anthony Brooks, our Week in Review panelist, but a joiner in the Week in Review this week, WBUR senior political reporter, has stayed with us. I want to give you the rest of the panel. Arlene Isaacson, president of Isaacson Political Consulting and co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus, joins us this week on the line. Hi there, Arlene.
Hi, nice to be with you.
And Richard Tessay, former Republican leader of the Massachusetts State Senate. Good to have you back too, Richard. Hey there.
Nice to be here today.
So join the discussion. We're going to talk about the week in the news in the state, pretty much all around coronavirus, the reopening, the mask order going into place on Wednesday, golf courses opening up, concerns about unemployment. What's been your reaction to the week in the news? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, Arlene and Richard, I want to give you a chance to react yourselves to what we heard from the governor in the press conference today.
Well, I think this is Richard. I think the governor's doing a really good job. He's been a steady hand. And, you know, he did, a great job in the press conference today. I'm a little depressed because if you read between the lines and listen to during the question and answer period, the summer is pretty much going to be a big problem. And I'm somebody who likes to go to the 4th of July parades. And, you know, and I do think... you know, just listening to it really makes me recognize just how, you know, just the way that this is impacting the economy. Down the Cape, you know, most of those businesses down there in the Berkshires and other parts, Gloucester, you know, are very seasonal in nature. And a lot of those businesses, they use up all their reserves just trying to get to the winter and the early spring. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, looking forward to the summer right now, when you're hearing about summer camps and, you know, people are probably, you know, questioning whether they're going to take vacations, but, you know, July festivities are going to be canceled. It's going to have a huge economic impact on the state the longer this goes.
Well, on that happy note, Arlene, what was your reaction to what you heard today? I don't mean to make light of it. It's just sometimes it just gets so hard that you almost want to laugh to stave off the sadness.
No, I agree. I think we actually have to for our collective and individual mental health. You know, I really appreciate the governor being honest with people. I think it's the smart way to handle things. He needs to set people's expectations, even when the news is glum, as that clearly is. But better to let people prepare mentally, emotionally, as well as financially, for what the economy is likely to look like, and set expectations so they can start talking to their kids about what their summers might look like and how it might be different from anything they've experienced in the past.
Our callers want to be a part of this conversation, so I'm going to turn us to the phones. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join in. We've got Dave on the line from Marblehead. Hi, Dave.
Hi, guys. Can I ask a quick logistical question about these news conferences? How many reporters are in the pool?
It's a great question. Anthony Brooks, what do we know? Anthony, what do we know about the pool that's there?
I mean, you know, full disclosure to the caller, it's a good question. Both Tiziana and I are remote, so we're not actually in that room. I know the pool is not as big as it usually is. It's a question that we can get a pretty quick answer from our own Steve Brown, who's part of that pool every day. But, Tiziana, I'm going to say it's something like 15 to 20 people, not more.
Yeah,
but,
that's
why don't we get out?
Seems like you hear the
Dave,
same
go
voices.
Ahead, and we'll see if we can find out.
Okay, well, it just seems like we hear the same voices. But my problem with today's news conference, for example, we're a week away from the magical date that they're supposed to have the plan, and nobody knows even a clue about the plan, I don't think. And the biggest thing that no one talks about and no one in the press asks about is the state budget. We're bleeding money. And nobody, has anyone talked about layoffs or reduction in salaries? And the Herald's had a little bit about it the last couple of days, seen nothing in the Globe about it. The legislature finally figured out how to turn their computers on the other day, and they did what they did best. I guess they borrowed money, but what's the plan? I mean, how long can we sustain this spending that we're going on as far as government goes, unless the federal government just buys another printing press and gives us the money? But that's
so
not
Dave,
likely to happen.
Let's turn to Richard Tessay on that. Yeah, let's turn to Richard Tessay. Now, Dave, we've got some people trying to find out from our State House reporter how many people are in the press pool. We'll get back to you. But in the meantime, Richard, a lot of good questions from Dave there. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't even think that policymakers on the state level have an idea as to how big the deficit's going to be. You have problems. You have a current fiscal year that we're in right now that ends on July 1st. And because the income tax date was extended out until July 15th, a lot of the revenue that the state would normally get during the month of April, which was the biggest month, is going to be delayed and roll over into the next fiscal year. So revenues are pretty significantly down. It could be as much as $3 billion. Nobody knows for sure. And you know, the legislature this week did go in both the House and Senate and pass a sort of stopgap, a measure that allows them to borrow and kind of, we'll let them get into the next fiscal year and at least lose.
Richard, I'm losing you there on the sound. I'm just going to take a quick break and let Dave, the caller, know. We did hear from Steve Brown, who's our State House reporter. He says there are usually about 10 reporters in the pool during these daily coronavirus briefings that have been happening. Today, there were 7. So there is your answer. Richard, while we're working on your sound, I'm just going to turn to Arlene, give her a chance to weigh in. Arlene, are you feeling this same sense of worry and urgency about the state's finances and about the kind of planning for things that don't just have to do with coronavirus that need to get done for our day-to-day lives?
Very much so. And I know I've spoken with many legislators who are very worried about the state budget and the kinds of cuts they know they're going to have to make and the uncertainty about where they can make them. Because, of course, there's a domino effect. If you cut, for example, monies that fund programs, you're also the layoffs that might make sense. Those are layoffs of people who are spending the money for groceries and restaurant deliveries and whatever few things end up being open at any given moment that helps the economy. And so you cut money to local aid, then you're cutting police and fire and nurses and teachers. You cut money to the transportation system. You're going to need that to get people back to work. So it's a web of interwoven issues, and the legislature is very much aware that they're going to be cutting.
And
let's
then
get
you
a
have
call
local
on the
communities.
Economy.
I was going to say
ahead,
you have
Richard.
Local communities. You have local communities that really depend upon meals tax to help balance their budgets. And as you know, most of the restaurants are closed, so there's going to be there are issues on the local level as well.
Let's grab another caller on the economy. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Anna is on the line from Chatham. Hi there, Anna.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I will be getting my last paycheck from my local library, where I'm a shelver, on May the 22nd. After that, I wanted to apply for PUA, so I made the phone call, and I'm told that the only way I can apply is via email. I don't own a computer. And they couldn't, their computer wouldn't take a home address. And I'm wondering if anyone on your panel can help me.
Great question, Anna. Anthony Brooks, I'm just going to start with you and ask, do we know, do the daily town halls that the governor was talking about today at the briefing, do we know if the content of those daily town halls where people can call in and get support on filing for unemployment might answer any of Anna's questions?
Boy, it's a good, it's a really good question. I mean, everything that I've heard from the governor when he talks about this talks about filing online for these benefits. So I'm sort of drawing a blank on advice for specific advice to help the caller about how you do it without a computer. But I think, you know, Tiziana, this might be a question we should sort of put to the producers and see if we can come up with something by the end of the break, unless Richard or Arlene have a smart idea. But I'm at a loss, and I'm really sorry that the caller is dealing with this.
Anna, we are going to put our producers on it and see if we can try to get an answer for you. In the meantime, Arlene, Richard, any ideas on this?
The system that the administration created, particularly for gig workers, those who in the past never could get unemployment compensation, is new. And they've struggled to put it together quickly, and I think done a pretty good job. But the fact of the matter is there's problems. And if you're dealing with a situation without internet or computer access, the question is, can you not call, and they will connect you to the appropriate people.
And I do, for our other listeners, I want to be clear. What Anna is talking about is the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, which is the new unemployment assistance program that was made possible by the CARES Act for gig workers and other 1099 workers who previously didn't necessarily qualify for unemployment. We do have some resources here from our producers. Anna, the Department of Unemployment Assistance does have a call center that they do believe can help you. If this is the call center you've already rung, I do apologize for that, but let me give you this number, 877-626-6800. That's 877-626-6800. They're open 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 to noon on Saturday, and they do have multilingual agents available. If I get additional information from the producers who are killing it back there, thanks everybody, we'll bring that up. Great slate of panelists with us today. Still with us remotely is Arlene Isaacson, co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus, Richard Tessay, former Republican leader of the Massachusetts State Senate, and WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. And you, you're a part of this too. Call us, weigh in on the week's news, ask your questions. Tell us how you think it's going, how you think the state's doing, and what you think comes next. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So, panelists, I want to talk now. One of the things that came up during the Q&A of the governor's press conference today was the tension between the speed at which Massachusetts is reopening and three other things. Well, really two. One is the states around us. Rhode Island starts to open up next week. Chris Sununu in New Hampshire started some rolling out of opening up last week, and people in the Commonwealth, including protesters at the State House earlier this week, who want to open up right now. We've got a little bit of sound for you that I want to play, and I am scrambling to get the right ones so that our folks in the control room can help me with this. This is Markel Moore, one of the folks out protesting this week, speaking with NBC 10 Boston.
People are out of work right now. This is not a game to be playing right now. I mean, people are losing their jobs. They lost their income. And I think, you know, we really need to think heavily about this. Do we really need to be closed down for a flu?
And then there's another protester who didn't provide his name, spoke with WCVB Channel 5.
It's just a flu. It's a bad flu, contagious flu. There are 30 million people that are out of work in this country. We have to go back to work. And Charlie Baker, you're a disgrace. You think you saw what's here? This is just the tip of the spear of what's coming down. Trump country is alive.
So you've got the economy, you've got public health perceptions, you've got politics all in play at this intersection. So much to talk about there. I'm hoping it's going to be a free-for-all and all three of you are just going to jump in.
You know,
Arlene, go ahead.
It's a tough situation. I think it's important. You know, I shared with some of you privately that I didn't intend to go down and check out that rally, but I heard the horns going down my street and decided to because I was, I thought someone should have the other point of view. You know, we feel for the people who are out of work. It's a horrible position to be in, but we're dealing with a pandemic as much as we are, more than we are dealing with a political situation. And so I personally went down there and spontaneously held a sign in support of nurses and doctors and the people who are taking care of everyone, including those who are at the rally down there. Because if any of those people get sick, the nurses and the doctors and the healthcare professionals will take care of them regardless of their political persuasion. And the medical folks are asking us to slow it down and wait until the pandemic subsides a little bit more before states open, and certainly to have more testing done first.
Richard.
I was, I looked at the poll that was done in the Globe, and, you know, really, it really struck me that we live in a very affluent state, because one of the questions was has the virus diminished your regular income? And 53% of the people said it had not, 45% it had. We are a very
Richard, we lost
state.
You. I just want to say, Richard, sorry, we're having a little trouble with your sound again. I want to make sure our listeners got that. Did you say 53% of people said this has not disrupted their income? Is that what you said?
The regular income, yep, and 45% said it had. And I just say, you know, we're lucky that we live in a state that people can go a couple of months without a major, you know, without it really impacting them. And then on the other hand, you have a lot of people who can work at home, you know, because we're such a technical state. But we got to recognize that there are a lot of people, one in four people in the state is unemployed right now, and a lot of small businesses. You know, every week this goes on, it was very easy to shut down the economy. I think it's going to be very difficult to reopen it. You just can't flick a switch. A lot of these companies, particularly restaurants and service industries, aren't going to be coming back, especially if this goes on for a lot longer.
Anthony Brooks, how does this square, the sound we just heard, the things we heard from protesters this week, these comments, with what we know about how the governor's performance is being received, you know, via polls and other kind of feedback around the Commonwealth?
We did a poll, as you know, Tiziana, just this week of about 400 or so nurses across the country, and Charlie Baker, who give Charlie Baker very high approval ratings. But in terms of responding to those protests, I get it. The economic pain is real. But I mean, one of those protesters called Charlie Baker a disgrace. And I think what we've heard from Baker is a consistent message of understanding the economic toll that these measures are taking. But his point of view is that if you don't take these steps, you've got a pandemic that runs much more rampant. And, you know, that's going to take an even bigger toll on the economy. So obviously it's a balancing act. But I don't see how you can begin to talk about putting the economy back together until you see those numbers start to come down. Because otherwise, you know, the hospital system is going to be overrun with sick people. And the state's economy is going to take a bigger hit for longer. So that's why one of the reasons I believe Baker's approval ratings are so high in terms of the way he's handling this crisis.
So, you know, time is flying by.
If any of you have watched the New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's daily briefings in the late mornings, he has frequently referenced the 1918 pandemic, where he said that he reminded people that it came in three waves and that they eased things up, and then the wave came back, and the second wave was worse than the first. So the issue, he's often said, is that it's not whether we will reopen, it's how we reopen. And of course, a subset of that is when.
So time is flying by. I am going to want to leave room in a couple of minutes for our hubbubs. We have two callers who both are about the economy. I'm going to see if I can get them both on. We'll play it by ear here. We've got Savino on the line from Foxborough. Savino, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Love your
well,
show,
thanks.
By the way. Thank you for.
Thanks.
I just feel that. Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead.
Okay. I just feel that, you know, since the beginning, we've gotten so many mixed messages, and we talked, you know, like something you just mentioned about the hospitals would get overrun if we really open. I'm not sure we have any stats that show that. I don't think we got overrun this time. And I feel that the pain is going to be way worse than what this brought us if we don't open up soon and stop being afraid and move on.
Thanks for that, Savino. Yeah, I appreciate the call, and I'm going to put one other voice with you. We've got Charlie on from Attleboro. Charlie, go ahead.
Hi. Boy, as I've been listening, I had a few more comments. One of the things I'd like to say
is... you got to pick just the most important, Charlie. I'm sorry, we're close to the end, so pick the one you most want to make.
We need to open, but we need to do what we should have done from the beginning. Protect the nursing homes, the elderly, and the people with comorbidities. Let everybody else go to work, because they have far, far less serious reactions. So we protect the elderly. Look, I'm 66, but I want to work. We have a small business. We might not have a business. And I want to tell you, when we talk about, the economy's hurt, but it's easy for somebody whose taxes are going to go up 5% next year to make up the difference. And to tell a person who's going to have no income that, I'm going to go extra cautious and wreck the economy. So anyway.
Charlie, I'm going to take it back from you there. Thank you. Thank you for that. So I got to manage time here because I want to make sure we've got time for our hubbub. So I'm just going to kind of recap those two callers and then I'm going to move us on. It is not the first time that we've heard people say there's a tension here between keeping people safe and getting the economy reopened. We are all feeling the pain on both sides and we got to get this figured out. I know that this is a subject we're going to continue to talk about here on Radio Boston in the days to come. So I want to turn to our panelists now with just our last few minutes, because not only is it time for hubbubs, but we want to do special hubbubs today because this Sunday is actually also Mother's Day. And so I want to give each panelist an opportunity to do a Mother's Day oriented hubbub. Arlene Isaacson, why don't you go first?
All right. Thank you. Well, in a time of consistently terrible news day after day for weeks and weeks, a lot of people are feeling sad and stressful for very justifiable reasons. And it's often said that the best antidote for sadness and stress is to focus on things that we're grateful for. And so for Mother's Day, I would encourage everyone to think of someone you're grateful for, whether they are literally a mother or they play a mother-like role for someone. And if we can show them gratitude, if we can say to them the things that, if God forbid we never saw them ever again, we wished we would have said to them, now is the time to say it. Whether to send them a card or make a call to them this weekend. And if you can afford it, help them by also helping the economy at the same time and buy them something from a local vendor, whether it's a local florist shop, not a national one, or get them a meal delivered from a restaurant or a pickup, get them a gift certificate from a local shop, or if they like the news, hopefully they do, buy them a subscription to a local newspaper or donate to a public radio station, of course. If we show our gratitude, not only will they appreciate it, but we'll all feel better.
Amen to that, Arlene. Thank you. How about you, Richard?
First, shout out to my mother. It's also right around the time it's her birthday, too. So it's a double. But I would say that mentioning how difficult and how much everything's changed, we still have to support organizations and that are doing a lot of good things. And this Sunday is going to be the 24th annual Mother's Day Walk for Peace. And it's still going to take place, but this year it's going to be a virtual walkathon. And although people can't gather in person as they have, in the past, the event is still important because it raises a lot of money to help serve and assist survivors of homicide victims, their families, and their neighbors. This year, the Martin Richard Foundation signed on as a sponsor to help the Lewis D. Brown Institute. And you probably remember that Martin Richard was the youngest victim of the Boston Marathon bombing. So that those who are interested in participating, they need to raise money again to continue all the good work that they do. And go online, Mother's Day Walk 4peace.org. And it's the number 4 as opposed to spelling it out. So it's Mother's Day Walk 4peace.org.
All right. Thank you for that, Richard. Anthony, you and I are going to defer to our panelists. We're out of time, so we're going to stop with their hubbubs. You and I can share ours offline. Richard Tessay, former Republican leader of the Massachusetts State Senate, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Arlene Isaacson, president of Isaacson Political Consulting and co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus, thanks.
Thank you.
And Anthony Brooks, WBUR senior political reporter, always a blast to have you. Thanks to you, too.
My pleasure, Tiziana. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too. And before we go, for others who are interested in support in filing for unemployment, I know Ann, our caller, did not have a computer, but if you do, you can also file a COVID-19 Department of Unemployment Assistance contact request. We'll have the link for you on our website, radioboston.org. And if you fill that out, you will get a telephone call back from the Department of Unemployment Insurance.